This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Here in the U.S., 52% of Americans support the legalization of marijuana for adults. That's according to a new national survey that came out last week. It's noteworthy because it's the first time in 40 years of doing the survey that a majority of Americans have approved legalization of marijuana. Well, Roger Rothman has been involved in marijuana issues for longer than that, 45 years. As a social worker in the Army, he conducted the first study of marijuana use in the military. He also sat in judgment of a soldier upon charges of possessing marijuana. He was Washington State Coordinator for the National Organization for Marijuana Laws Reformation back in the 1970s. He lobbied for laws decriminalizing marijuana in our state. He was an underground activist in the medical marijuana movement and also signed on for the legislative initiative that eventually passed in 2012, legalizing marijuana here, despite some of his misgivings. Roger Rothman tells this story in his new book, Marijuana Nation, One Man's Chronicle of America Getting High from Vietnam to Legalization. Welcome, Roger. Great to have you back.
Thanks for the invitation.
I want to go way back. You were in Vietnam in 67, and marijuana use was growing exponentially among all Americans and also among soldiers. And this was perhaps the first time where you began to question the prevailing wisdom about marijuana as expressed by both senators here and the way military justice was handling it. Could you talk a little bit about how?
I was 24 years old. I was a lieutenant in the Army, and I was in Vietnam with an infantry division. A soldier, my same age, 24 years old, was caught possessing a small amount of marijuana. And I was one of six officers who were ordered to be on a court-martial board that essentially would try him, and if he were convicted, sentence him. And he was facing 6 months in prison for possessing essentially 10 joints. Now, I knew nothing about marijuana back then. I didn't grow up in a part of the country or in an era where marijuana was available. What I thought of it was that it was something that was popular among jazz musicians and perhaps beat poets, but I had no experience with it on my own. But during that court-martial, as I began to get a sense of this guy and what he was facing, 6 months in prison, and I knew something about prisons. I had worked as a social worker in prisons before going into the Army. Something seemed terribly wrong. And it was really the juxtaposition of attitudes about marijuana in comparison to attitudes about alcohol that got me up in arms. Alcohol was modeled as the way to relax, to come down, to release tensions if you were in the military. And alcohol was cheap and widely available, and it was almost required that you be a drinker and at times a pretty heavy drinker.
And another thing that kind of set you off at that time, there was a war atrocity in Vietnam, and fairly directly, marijuana was blamed for it. This had done this to these soldiers.
Senator Thomas Dodd from Connecticut gave a speech on the floor of the United States Senate. And in that speech, this was shortly after the My Lai massacre was disclosed by a journalist named Seymour Hersh, a massacre in which 300 to 500 innocent Vietnamese civilians, many of them women and children, were murdered by American servicemen. Senator Dodd wondered in his speech, how could this possibly be? The American serviceman has a history of being beneficent and helpful and handing out candies and blankets, and he reported much of what he remembered from World War II. And he said, I have an answer, and the answer was marijuana use by soldiers in Vietnam. Now, I had done some studies of marijuana use by soldiers, and I simply could not sit back and listen to that without protesting. So I wrote to him, and I said, I've done some research. I think you're wrong in attributing atrocities to marijuana smoking. And I soon had an invitation to testify before his committee.
So early on, you saw that some of the punishments for marijuana use were maybe worse than what was going on with marijuana use itself. And you saw the way that it was demonized back in the 1960s. But it's not as though you were naive about some of the issues involved. You came to the University of Washington social work faculty back in the early 70s. You taught courses in substance abuse. And it was a subject that you got to know firsthand. What was going on with your own marijuana use, and how did it inform your views on marijuana dependency?
Well, I came to Seattle in 1972, straight from Berkeley, California, where I was a doctoral student, and marijuana was not difficult to passively inhale if you were in Berkeley. When I came to Seattle, I was recruited to teach courses in alcoholism and substance abuse. But at that point, marijuana policy reform, the movement, was beginning to gain steam. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, was founded in 1970. And by the mid-1970s, a number of states were moving towards decriminalizing the possession, not the sale, but the possession of marijuana. So I became very active in lobbying for decriminalization. But there was more to the story. I was smoking a lot. And my own marijuana use at first casual and occasional and really frosting on the cake became something very different. It became compulsive and heavy. It got in the way of my marriage. It got in the way of my earning tenure and promotion as a professor. And I came to a point after hearing my wife pretty much on the line for me that I needed to leave it behind.
And there are still people who don't really think that you can be addicted to marijuana, and maybe in some sense you can't be addicted to marijuana, but still have been in your face about talking about marijuana dependency as misrepresenting what marijuana is.
You know, I think it's part of the hyperbole of the debate. You know, should marijuana be legalized? Should prohibition be maintained? And it's almost as if people who believe that it should be legalized think that if there were any acknowledgement that marijuana can be harmful, they will be undoing their own cause. And the fact of the matter is that there's a strong rationale for regulating and taxing marijuana, tightly regulating it, as a more public health and public safety kind of an approach than prohibition, which unfortunately just doesn't work, even though it sounds good on paper. But some people in the movement have said, you know, if you're going to be in favor of legalization, you can't also believe that it's harmful.
Roger Rothman is talking with us about his 45 years working on the marijuana issue as an activist and also as an academic. His book is called Marijuana Nation. It's a story about this long-term activity he's had in this area. And kind of bookending the book is the story of your brother, which also obviously had a large influence on the way you thought about drugs. Tell us about your brother.
When I was a student at Berkeley at one point, I got a phone call from my parents. Could I fly east? My parents lived in Massachusetts, and that's where I grew up. And the purpose was to join a family therapy session or a series of therapy sessions in an inpatient drug treatment center where my brother Brian was being treated. He struggled with drugs and alcohol for much of his adult life. Thank God there were many years during that time in which he was sober and doing very, very well. But towards the end of his life, he died of an opiate overdose at the age of 51, I believe. The demons came back out, and they wreaked havoc in his life and in the lives of his children, his wife, and, of course, the rest of us who loved him and felt pretty helpless.
And it sounds as though you felt as though, boy, is this the right thing to talk about making drug laws more liberal when my own brother was so adversely affected by this?
It's one of a number of times over the years where I've had to wonder, am I headed in the right direction if I'm arguing sending people to jail for possessing marijuana is the wrong way? My brother's struggle has been part of it. My own struggle with marijuana has been part of it. The attitudes of some recovering addicts who will say essentially, look, you turn on that faucet, you make it easier for people to possess drugs, marijuana included, without any negative sanctions to worry them, you're going to decimate communities. You're going to decimate communities of color. You can't have a liberal policy without watching people essentially go down the drain. And when I've heard that, I've had to doubt, is legalization the right way to go?
Well, and now it's in place. The stores are scheduled to open, I understand, early in July. The tax revenue will be able to come in. And what you see as the best part of this is that it'll fund programs to both educate and also deal with the issues as they arise. We'll have to have you back a year from now because that money will be in the pipeline and to get your impression on whether or not those programs have been set up and are effective.
I'll look forward to it.
That will be the test. Roger Rothman, thank you so much for coming by. His new book, a memoir of his life, is called Marijuana Nation, One Man's Chronicle of America Getting High from Vietnam to Legalization. This is The Record on KUOW.